The other day, I was sitting here at the campsite in the morning drinking my coffee, and a guy pulled in a, I think it was about a 2018 Chevy ambulance, and jumps out and says, "Hey, can I take a picture of your ambulance?" I said, "Sure." We started talking. He had just got the ambulance about 6 months before. This was a former military training ambulance. So you can imagine it was just overbuilt, and it was actually a six-wheel drive. So it had a differential in front, and it was really great. And he goes, "What's your podcast about?" And I said, "Well, it's about the mental processes we nomads go through, and you know, what we deal with." And he laughed. And so, you know, my response was kind of snarky. I said, "Yeah, it's funny, but that's what I do." And he goes, "No, I'm not. I'm saying that you hear an awful lot about what you need to do this, and whether you should buy an ambulance, or what kind of rig you should have, and what should be on the rig, and all this other stuff. But you really don't hear very much about the experiences or the experience of being a nomad." We'll talk about, you know, the many varied experiences of nomading in this podcast. Podcast 1037, the Bob Davis Podcasts. I'm going to start out with a very simple, clean statement that if you want to help the Bob Davis Podcasts, best thing to do is to go to iTunes and subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcasts at iTunes. This is the place that they've been since the beginning. If you have the podcast app on your iPhone, they've re-engineered that, so it makes it a little easier. You can subscribe also to the podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. There's a place where it says subscribe to the RSS feed. Also, under each of the podcasts, I think there's a subscription button. You can subscribe on Stitcher.com, Google Podcasts, Spotify as well, if you so desire. So anyway, that's my pitch. Also, if you want to help, I do appreciate donations to thebobdavispodcast.com. Go to the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Look for the picture of Mobile Podcast Command, which is the ambulance. You can't miss it. Just underneath that is a big yellow donate button, which takes you to PayPal. That's what I'm using for payment processing. Click on that and go follow the directions. And thanks for your donations at the Bob Davis Podcast. A guy just donated $50. I'm not going to say your name, my friend, but... And this is great. I said, you got a big mention coming up in the next podcast. He goes, "Please, guys, do this because they don't want to be mentioned. And thank you very much for your $50 donation." I just heard a guy who's a futurist talking about change. And one of the things he talked about is how we are in the process of what appears to be a massive reshoring effort in the United States to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. for a lot of reasons. Not necessarily because it's cheaper, not necessarily because we don't like China, but because given all the things that have happened, manufacturing in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada is beginning to sprout because you don't have to wait for a container, you know, because you can get and you can deal with somebody that you can trust. And you know, if you invest in manufacturing here in the United States, it's not going to be taken away, right? You're not going to not get your stuff. So let's talk about manufacturing in the U.S. Let's start with Depot Star. If your company is considering American manufacturing, I'm going to give you a name, Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com, D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, depotstar.com. So this part of Arizona, this town, Quartzsite, during this period of time has become really a nomad mecca. This is a place where, first of all, one of the biggest RV shows in the United States, probably the biggest in the Southwest, is held here in just a few days. And there's another sort of convention or get-together of nomads from another group, which is led by what I would call now a nomad guru. And there's a lot of grousing about how the whole nomad experience is going Hollywood as the result of the Nomadland movie, which I would think by now would be an afterthought, because it's been, what, over 2 years since the movie? And we've dealt with an awful lot of stuff since then. Not that there's been a lot of movies, but so much has been happened, has been water, you know, over and under the bridge in the last couple of years. So I'm a little surprised that this is still a current thing. But one of the things that I've tried to do in my podcasts is to, and I talked about this in podcast 1036, I don't want to belabor it too much in this podcast, is to assiduously avoid telling people what to think, what to do, how to do it. Because one of the things I've learned doing this is there is the quote-unquote nomad land experience, which most people are not experiencing. The people that I'm sitting in a field, I'm not sitting with a bunch of people living out of their cars. You know, I'm out here in the desert with people who, some people derisively say, oh, these people, all they want to do is boondock and camp for free. They don't have any money. I'm sitting in the desert right now in full view of probably $3 or $4 million worth of RVs. And there aren't that many of them at this campground. So the idea that people who want to boondock don't have any resources is kind of silly. But I guess my point here is that there when we get down to the experience, if somebody were to say, you know, what's it like? Boy, is it really hard to explain. And I think it depends on what you come into this with and what your resources are when you come into it and whether or not you were forced into it. So one could say that some people are homeless on wheels. You know, they're in a vehicle of some kind, but basically they're homeless. And then there are other people who have various levels of resources that come in with RVs, some of them sumptuous, some of them just used old, you know, Tiogas or whatever you call it, mini Winnies and different types of RVs in different states of repair, as I've often talked, and some just really fun, you know, silly vehicles that are all over the place. And you've got all these different groups of people. But I think there's some common things about the experience of being a nomad that are worth talking about. And what I'm trying to do is advance this a little bit, because mainly because of two or three people who have said that what they're really interested in when they watch YouTube, and they're not getting from these gurus on YouTube, that people actually, at least here this week, have literally been paying homage to and worshiping in some ways. A couple of them are coming across as actual gurus and talking about their philosophy and you know, the philosophy that you perhaps should have about doing this, and that people are meant to do this and everything else. I don't look upon this, I hesitate to call this a movement, the nomad thing. I'm afraid it's going to become a movement. I hope it does not become Hollywood. It doesn't go Hollywood. It doesn't become chic. I mean, I think the van life thing has certainly gone through a sort of period of chic. One of my friends here, Sandy, said, well, look at it this way. You know, at some point in the tech world, when companies started up, there was a proliferation of these tech companies, and it was the thing. It was the thing to do, and then there was a shakeout, and now you just you have an industry that goes along and things happen, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad, and you have to think of this in the same way, that this is at this point, and we don't know where we are in the curve in terms of suddenly everyone wanting to do this, because if certain things happen economically, there may or may not be more people doing nomad. I hesitate to call it a movement. I don't want it to become Hollywood. I'm sad that there are people that are willing to be worshipped, literally. I think it's like worshiping the golden calf. I'm afraid of that. But you can't avoid it. It's America, and one of the things that happens with anything that's cool to do, everybody wants to do it. And it becomes a big thing, and it becomes it's sort of an ecosystem of things that supply this movement, and then it becomes an industry. And we're on the verge of that, and that's why RVs are more expensive, and that's why suddenly everyone's interested in this. And Nomadland is not the first movie about nomads. I joked in the last podcast the last thing we need is a sitcom about nomads, but I'm sure that there is a TV series or a scripted show, a scripted series on one of these channels, either in development or will be in development, because it's unavoidable, either based on the movie, which is a whole different thing than what a lot of people are doing, or based on some permutation of nomad life that everyone seems to be interested in and nobody really understands. And I will tell you, least of all, myself, and I'll talk about that in the second half of this podcast. I'll tell you what would help a lot of people right now, even if they can't go out and be a nomad, is stretching, getting some exercise. It seems kind of silly, but it makes a huge difference in your life. And of course, I have the same problem because it's been cold. I mentioned in a couple of podcasts, it's hard to do yoga when it's below a certain temperature because you actually hurt yourself because you're not getting enough heat. And so I end up having to try to do some kind of exercise in the vehicle. And for that, there's something called BU Enterprises. And you can check them out online at buenterprises.com or click on the banner at the top of the page of the podcast's homepage, thebobdavispodcast.com. Juliet from BU and her team have designed a toolbox that helps you be free, that helps you be yourself, and then helps you exercise. I did a Zoom session with her. She can do that for individuals and a team. She can do it for corporations. There's corporate rates and all kinds of discounts. In fact, I think there's still a discount for the Bob Davis podcast. I think you just enter Bob. B-O-B. So it's pretty cool, actually. A lot of options for getting some help. And it's all done with Zoom, and you can do it from where you are, anywhere, as long as you have, obviously, a Zoom signal. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says BU, BU, or check them out online at buenterprises.com. How do I explain this? I mean, I almost need it used to be a video with graphics to explain that there are different groups of nomads. There are young kids doing the van life thing. There are young people doing the let's go around and beg, you know, at the truck stops for gas money. There are people in school buses. There are digital nomads. There are people who have retired and have resources and have an RV that they pull a car behind them and they go to national parks and they come down here in the winter from Akron, as I like to joke, or Minneapolis, St. Paul, or, you know, Fargo or someplace like that where it's just bitterly cold. They come down here because it's 70 degrees and sunny every day. And you can use your solar and, you know, it's really an optimal place. It's dry. I mean, I think it's rained once in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So there's all kinds of different people doing various different nomad things. So I'm going to differentiate. It is not an editorial judgment. I'm going to differentiate the weekend warriors and the seasonal retirees from people who have made the decision to push off from the, as they say, sticks and bricks or back in the world life to choose a life on the road. That is me. And I've often talked about, I traveled for 6 or 7 years off and on. And the reason I decided to do this primarily was, you know, I had my own business, which is the podcasts. And I was traveling and covering news stories and covering various political events. And I found that when I was traveling, I had a very high vibe. And when I came home, that vibe started to descend. And while I might have been happy to get back to my yoga studio and get back to my friends, I started asking myself, why am I coming home? because wherever I had gone, I had to turn around and drive 2,000 miles or 1,500 miles back to quote-unquote home. And the real catalyst for me was this whole period starting in the summer of 2019, probably. And it was a disillusionment with talking about current events. And I don't need to say any more than that. You can listen to those podcasts and you can make your own judgments about it. But I decided I am not going to sit here and just stew and do the same thing over and over and over again. And I felt that there was a need to be repotted. And so I decided I'm going out on the road. To make a long story short, there was a lot of discussion and investigation of getting some other kind of vehicle. Finally, I decided I'm going with this vehicle. This, what is it, 20? It's a 2000 Ford 450 diesel ambulance. And even since I've been traveling, I have had to spend a fair amount of money on this thing mechanically to continue to improve it. So it's an ongoing project. And that was my motivation, was to repot, to reset, to reboot, to get away from the norm, the same thing over and over again. And there was nothing holding me in Minneapolis. So I left. And I've been traveling consistently by myself for a year. As I have said, initially the beginning, it was just pell-mell across the country, back and forth. And now, and I wasn't even seeing anything. I was just, I'm going to go here and see this friend. I'm going to go here and do this. I'm going to go here and do this for a client. I'm going to go here and do this for this. I didn't really have any reason. And I think a lot of this has been finding my feet. In other words, finding some purpose in this. And this is an ongoing thing. I've been stationary now. So after a year of travel, you know, I did the commemorative one-year travel podcasts. And then I came here and I just decided, you know, I've never had a full winter in a place like this. So I decided that, and the high price of fuel helped me make the decision that I'm just going to stay here. And so I've stayed here in Arizona or thereabouts for most of the winter. It's now almost February. A lot of people start leaving here in February. I'm not. I'm sticking around. I'm going to stick here until it is too hot to stay, or maybe I will stay. I don't know. Finding a new community, finding a new experience as part of learning about individual communities. And I will tell you, the individual community you're in might vary depending on who you're camping with. So now we're camping. We're sitting in one spot and we're camping. And I've been having a great time. One of the chief things about the experience is this, and this is the thing that I've noticed from reviewing my notes from the last year, as well as the last couple of months. A lot of this experience is a discovery. And I'm shocked at how that onion keeps getting peeled. I'm shocked at how, you know, that experience keeps resonating and how it feels new every day. My friend John Holland came to see me. We did a podcast just recently. I said, why are you coming out here? You know, and he said, because I want to have the nomad experience. And he went over to Palm Springs because that was the closest airport to Quartzsite, rented a transit van, and because that's the kind of van that he wants to get, and drove over here, and we spent a few days together. The weather wasn't that great, but, you know, that's the thing about this experience. Some days the weather is terrible. Some days the weather is great. Here, it's almost always great. So he just hit it in December's the worst month here, if there is such a thing as a worst month. It's just blustery and colder and windier and cloudier, and it rained a few times, and it's been beautiful. That's all ended, and it's just been gorgeous for the past month or so. So John missed that. Sorry, my friend, you missed the good weather out here in Quartzsite. Anyway, it was great because again, he decided the only way to really fully understand what the experience is about is to just come dip in and do it and experience it. And of course, I did that for, you know, almost 6 years before I decided to travel permanently by just going and doing and everything else. So, you know, I think a lot of people start this, if they are choosing it, they start it tentatively and sort of see how it's going to feel. And then they finally pull the trigger. And I mean, I didn't just pull the trigger. I blew it up. I got rid of everything I owned, and everything I have, which is not much, is in this truck that I'm sitting by here while I sit in front of the fire. So I haven't really talked to John since to see how the experience sort of settled in his mind. But I said, "Are you going to trick out your van?" And he was like, "I'm not into builds, and I'm going to throw all my camping stuff in the truck, and I'm going to go, and I'll build it out as I go," which is actually, apparently, according to the gurus, the way you're supposed to do it, because then you'll see what you need. But for me, you know, it's not really about that stuff. For me, it has been this experience, this developmental experience, that one of the things that the guy that pulled up here in the campground with the ambulance, I said to him, "You know, what's your plan?" And he kind of gave me this blank look, which I know that look very well because I had much the same response when people asked me what my plan was. And he goes, "Well, you know, it's weird. I really don't have a plan." And I said, "You know, that's exactly what I said. And it's okay. You don't have to have a plan. I don't know where I'm going to go after this. And I don't know what experience I'm going to have after this. I'm not really concerned about that. You are living literally day to day." And for me, that's a great thing, because I'm the kind of person that projects a lot and tries to figure out what's going to happen a lot. So living day to day. And when I say living day to day, you know, you get up in the morning and you're like, "Well, what do I need? And I've got to go into town or find a town, go to a bank. There's things I still have to do. I have checks from clients and things like that. I have to find an associated bank where I can deposit those. There's a lot of things I have to do. I have to wash the truck. You find yourself going into town, whether you want to or not, to get groceries or this or that. And every day is like, you know, you wake up thinking, "Well, what do I have to do today?" That's unusual for me. I'm not the kind of person that wakes up everybody and says, what do I have to do today?" And when you work for a living, right, when you're doing a job for somebody, you already know what you're going to do most of the time. You don't get up and go, "What do I have to do today?" You might do that once you sit down at the desk to do the job. You might think, "Okay, this is what I have to do today." But this is a new experience in the sense that every day is a new slate, even though I might do the same things. I had a bunch of other stuff written down about, you know, how I become more compulsive about keeping the van clean and doing all this stuff that I do on a day-to-day basis. You know, I don't need to talk about that. I do think that there's something deeper going on. I think there's something deeper going on in our country. I think if more people are attracted to do this, it isn't because they're quitting a job because they want to do something more fulfilling. There's a deeper octave, or if you will, a higher octave, here as part of a social experience that more and more people are finding themselves desirous of just breaking free. And it's very hard to explain. You know, one of the things I noted in the notes that I made the first year on the road was this constant effort to come to grips with what is actually going on in this effort. You know, I didn't have to do this. I could have stayed where I was. I could have supplemented my income with other things. There's a lot I could have done to stay where I was, but I knew that it was a dead end. And so doing this was, for me, a real positive move to again, break away from what I considered to be stultifying. Those are the words. Dead end, stultifying, boring as hell. And I don't find myself getting bored. Lately, I'm starting to get itchy. I'm starting to get antsy again. You know, I'm starting to think, well, where do I want to go? I've got some maps of all the free campgrounds around here, and I'm starting to think, well, I'm going to go down that way. I'm going to go down this way. Maybe I'll go over to here. You know, trying to start to figure out in terms of planning you know, where I want to go next. But like the guy that came into my camp, you know, I don't really have a plan, and it's okay not to have a plan. I'm not a person given to depression, so I don't know necessarily what it is like to be depressed. I find myself in a very high vibration almost all the time. You go into town and you see people that you know because you've, I mean, people, other nomads. And the people that are out here all the time, we kind of recognize each other. I went in to go do my laundry today, and I saw, you know, an old GMC van that was lifted. It had big all-terrain tires on it, and there were three young women at least in that truck, and they were all traveling together. And you know, one of the things I think is really interesting is that we get dirty. You know, we, our fingers, our nails get dirty, our feet get dirty, you know, our clothes get threadbare or dirty, and you know, we all go to the laundry to do our laundry and also take a shower. But we're camping, and you know, you're traveling, and so you there's a sort of rugged kind of look that everybody has. And all three of those women had that look, and yet they were having, just, you could tell they were just having a great time. Just literally sitting out in the parking lot, on the ground, on the blacktop, you know, having conversations, talking, jumping up to go see if so-and-so was out of the shower yet, doing this, doing that. And then I came out of the shower, and I was in my bare feet, and the lady at the shower is like, you know, she said something about my dirty feet, and I said, well, you're not yelling at me because I'm walking on the cement. She goes, no, our floor is dirty, and your feet are going to get dirty again. And I just laughed. You know, I'm not worried about my feet getting dirty. I washed my body. I'm good. And I just laughed. And everywhere you go, especially here in Quartzsite, you just have these wonderful you know, interactions with people that are running businesses. Most of them very concerned about people, and I love that. So it's a very high vibe, and it's a day-to-day. It's one day at a time. And in fact, there is a higher purpose and octave to it. Again, now I'm going to tell you, it's very hard to describe this. I can only say what I feel, and that is I think there is something going on, and I think that it's driving people to make decisions about their lives that are like, listen, you know, I could be dead next month. I could be dead next year. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care. Damn the torpedoes. You know, it's not, I'm not going to live my life in a place in a certain way, whatever that way is. I don't know. I'm not saying that everyone should hit the road. I'm not saying that we're meant to do this. I mean, human beings are meant to do a lot of things. They're not just meant to wander around in a vehicle and camp in the desert. You can do lots of different things, and you're meant to do lots of different things because human beings have this incredible flexibility to be able to do lots of things. But it feels like there is something deeper going on. There is a deeper motivation that is very hard to put your finger on, that that's active. All I can tell you is that I wouldn't trade what I've experienced since I've been doing this full time for anything. This has been an incredible experience. There have been good days and bad days. There have been difficult days. There have been days when I thought that my truck was going to fail. And there's days where I've faced, well, what am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about that? I've had to face, you know, death in the family on the road. You know, I've been sick. I have been, you know, I've been frustrated and very angry at times. But I've also had these incredible moments of euphoria. And they come at the strangest times. They come despite the experience. You might think, oh, it must be when you drive on a road, a ribbon of road through a mountain, and it's beautiful and the sun is shining and everything else. Or it could be sitting around a campfire with a bunch of people you don't know, just having a great time. Or really laughing for the first time, just laughing for the first time in a long time, really hard, both at other people and at myself. So there's a varying degree of emotional experiences. I wouldn't trade any of these experiences for anything. You know, I could talk, and I'm still not going to be able to, you know, get the pros off the top of my head that approaches being able to explain the depth of this nomad experience. It isn't the movie. It's not that experience. My experience has been different because my motivations for doing it are different. Your experience and my experience might be two different things. I'm fully committed to doing this for the foreseeable future. We'll see where I'm at in 2 or 3 years, and of course the podcast will be part of it. Something is going on. This is an individual experience, and I think part of it is people are saying, you know what, I don't know how much longer I'm going to live. Literally, this is what we're dealing with. This is what happens when you have a million deaths from a disease in a couple of years. You know, people start asking and questioning, what am I living for? What's the purpose of my life? What's the motivation of my life? Why am I even doing what I'm doing? I want to live. I want to have an experience. I want to go out and see something and experience something. Maybe it's going to national parks. I don't know. I don't know, whatever your thing is. I have deeper experiences, almost religious experiences doing this. And I don't mean Jesus, God, or any of that. I mean these really deep, powerful, emotional experiences which come without warning. And that's how I know I'm doing the right thing. That's how I know there's confirmation. I don't need a guru. I don't want someone to tell me before I experience it myself what I'm going to experience or what I have to look out for. I'm not interested in getting any help. I'll help myself. If I need help, I'll get help. You know, if I can help someone, I will help someone. And willingly, you can't receive if you don't learn to help. All that stuff is imperative. I don't need to, you know, I don't want to sound selfish because I've tried to be very helpful out here and without, you know, expecting anything in return. But, you know, but those are my conclusions, that it's almost impossible to explain what the experience is like. Quick story. So we have a thing called a long-term visitor area, LTVA, and you get a sticker and you can use for the season, you can use the services at LTVAs or stay there without any, you know, without being molested by the authorities as long as you want. Now, I camp in another area, but I often go down to the LTVA to throw garbage away or to use the vault toilet. And I was down there the other day, and this guy walked up and he goes, "Hey, I saw your truck. You're from Minnesota." And I was like, "Yeah, well, so am I." And we're talking about what he's doing. And he goes, "36 Lynn." And I was like, "Oh yeah, 36 Lynn." So you often hear me talk about 36 Lynn, the famous, now famous, worldwide, nationwide, independently owned and operated refueling station in South Minneapolis at Lindale and 36th, and it's in the Lynn Lake neighborhood. So what's the deal? Well, first of all, it's a independently owned and operated refueling station, which means they get a bit better deal on fuel. And so that is why they're always busy, because they pass that savings on to customers. But for those guys, it's always been about the store. So visit 36 Lynn in South Minneapolis next time you're in town. They got great coffee and they have great locally sourced products in the store. And say hello, 36 Lynn. Check them out online at 36lynn.com. They have a great Instagram feed. Also, you can click on the 36 Lynn banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right, it is time to climb in the truck, turn on the heater, relax a little bit, and get ready for the next day. Thanks for listening to Podcast 1037. 1037, the Bob Davis Podcasts, live from Quartzsite for the time being. We'll be back on the road soon. Thanks for listening.